to recognize and acknowledge Secretary Chris Dillon and LA Coalition for Policy by Gabriel Rule with us. Thank you. Before we begin, please silence your phones and long live mute your microphones. Remember to manually unmute your microphones to speak and return to the hearing when done. Today, we will revisit Senate Bill 32, College Credit for High School Students, and then return to our review of House Bill 164, Early Education, Reading, and Visual Education. We will begin with Senate Bill 32 by Senator Stevens, and our staff is at Senator Stevens, Slim Wagner, who is with us this morning. I'd like to note that we have online for questions at Will from the Department of Education and Early Development. In addition, Superintendent Andrew Schulman and Paul Lehrer, Vice President for Academics, Student Affairs at the University of Alaska. Welcome, Mr. Lampton. It's good to see you again. Do you have any introductory remarks that you'd like to make today?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the record. My name is Jim Brown, Vice President for Senior Students. This is the Senior Students. Appreciate you being on this bill. Unfortunately, he's not a kid. He's not a baby. He's a minister of the Senate this morning. But really, it's been a just for a while. I mean, this is a bill for middle college. It sets up some framework to help improve and expand our middle college and acknowledge what's going on in some of the major districts and what the academy needs to structure and move forward with scaling this up to more districts. That's the overall summary of the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Lampton. Do members of the committee have questions? So I don't see any questions. I'd like to remind members that our education committee just heard the bill on April 19th. We were invited in public testimony and received two amendments, zero fiscal notes. We received no amendments, but we announced the amendment deadline of Tuesday, May 4th at noon. It is my intention to move the bill out of committee today if the committee is willing. Commissioner Griffin, do we have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move the committee subsequent for Senate Bill 32 Finance, 32-LS0307, /I, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Hearing none, I've thought no further comments from the committee. We're very pleased to be locally expanding this bill to more of our high school students and members of the university. Thank you for coming forward. Thank you all for being online today. In case we have any questions, appreciate your work and your staff effort for kids that have worked on this platform and attending high school. So thank you. And kind of brief things to sign the paper.
services provided, and the city start making corrections. these are instruments we're able to get back on to really improve that. So, we actually have to have parents and teachers here. Pretty strong in Alaska, back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Most of that was through federal grants. And then World Cup was able to take advantage of that. They were serving 16 communities at one time. And then we were trying to expand that. As the funds started drying up after the Bush administration and the Obama administration, the funds started drying up. They were trying to, at the state and Alaska level, keep that funding going and actually put it into statute. I did pass the bill in 2010 out of the House. It was passed 32-5. We were able to get it into legislation in 2012 on the Senate side. And I tell you that Representative Thomas was, Bill Thomas was a huge supporter of that. And if it wasn't for his help, we probably wouldn't have been able to get that introduced into statute. And this started in the Penn administration and finally got successful into the Cornell administration. One of the things that we overlooked, unfortunately, was that it was a 3-year, and sunsetted after 3 years, but fortunately we've been able to fund it and keep it going ever since at a much lower level than what was originally intended, but we're still able to keep it going. And then it took a further hit with 2019 when we basically had a government shutdown. We weren't able to pass the reverse sweep, and services were cut off, and we lost a lot of parent educators and a lot of program directors during that time. So this is our opportunity to get back on track on providing early education for Alaskans throughout the state. One of the most effective ways of doing that, especially when you look at trying to deliver early education opportunities out in rural Alaska where communities are very removed from one another and there's very little population densities. At that time, we had calculated it was about $3,400 per family to be able to deliver our parents as teachers. And we had about 60,000 to 65,000 children under the age of 5, children 5 years of age. And we looked at about 1.34 multiply of children per household. So that the cost effectiveness of delivering the program is high impact, especially when you look at the services that are delivered and how you're able to take advantage of those early learning stages of a child's brain developing. And I just want to give a little bit of a shout-out to how it works in the military. We have the Parents as Teachers program, the third Parents as Teachers program is the Girls at Home program. We had a Alaska Defense Initiative program that was done a couple of years ago up in Fairbanks. We had a lot of blasts up there to talk about the future of the state of Alaska as a command center for the United States, especially the Arctic region. And being as much close as we have up here in Alaska. And it was at that time I first met Senior Army Commander Major General Angusak. And we talked about what it takes to support military families here in the state of Alaska. And he brought up the Girls at Home program, the Parents and Teachers program, and how important it was for military families. The Department of Defense really focuses funding mostly on the Parents and Teachers program for those who have a significantly more deployments. So they focus on those bases, those communities first, because one of the things they realize is a positive side effect of the Parents and Teachers, because not only are you meeting with the parents once a week and making sure the parents know what to teach your children and how to teach your children and what stages there are your children should be at certain benchmarks. And families get together once a month also for social interaction with the children. And at that point, they discovered that there was actually kind of a support group for those deployed families. And you also look at military families and pregnant women who are often isolated from their families. That support group was really beneficial in making sure that the children have stability and have those social emotional connections and were able to succeed much better with their public education, because you'll see that families move quite a bit to military families, and so this was the ability to make sure so there was sustainability and the highest impact of the medical early education. So it's not like a mouthful, but it's PAT, PAS, parents and teachers, we have parents program now with the military. I was very proud to hear that here in the state of Alaska, they saw that as an important tool in supporting families here, up here, especially those that need to pull. So, what does this bill do? Section 14 of the bill calls for the Department of Education and the government to create that statewide parents teachers program and kind of look at not so detailed because the regulations have been able to drop that a little bit further. But there is national guidelines to what we'll be meeting and making sure that we're as effective as this program should be. And my
point is okay.
That's a very good question, Chair Drummond. I don't know the answer to that. I should probably follow that and check into that a little bit closer. But to talk about why it was in the Department of Education and Development, we're looking at this program, is because the child's development delays and health problems, when they're detected early, you can solve it. So these are all kind of combined together as it is an early education, early learning program. However, the components of the pre-screens and making sure that we discover any health problems early is intertwined with the brain's development and making sure that we're taking opportunities for their learning. So that's how they kind of overlap, and then now the Department of Health and Social Services. At one time, was looking at taking over because they felt like it was better protected in that department. Now it's the Department of Education and Development because it's always going to be on the chopping block for cuts. And I just want to reemphasize to everybody here in the committee that the best investment that we can make in making sure not only our public education system delivers what we hope to deliver, but to be the most cost effective on society. Because even you look at the prison populations, they can determine that the prison population is based on reading proficiency scores of children by third grade. So that is a determination on how many prison beds that we're going to need in the future. And if that's the case, then that's where we need to make our investments. And I just want to add that the Federal Reserve, we put a couple of documents in the packets. There's actually those are more articles written by the Federal Reserve, but there's a lot of information on the Federal Reserve's websites on the return on investment opportunities for early education. And I just want to point out one other document. There's a pre-K now, and again, now is in parentheses, but the K now is next to each other. It says pre-no. It says no. And this is a retired general who have written about the importance of early education for national security because we're not investing in our children at the proper stages of their life to be able to make sure that we have people graduating from high school, ready to enter the military. So they want to make sure they have the highest educated people even high school before they enter into the military service.
Thank you, Representative Tuck. Okay, you really grabbed someone at the department might have an idea of how parents are, how parents or teachers program is delivered in the last year and a half, because I know the program is out there. It's not very large right now, but it would be good to know because I think that the program delivery is both cost effective and maybe will allow for more families to be served. Thank you for that, Dr. Allen. Deputy Commissioner Mullin, perhaps you could only answer that question if you don't get us that information. Please go ahead and welcome to the meeting this morning.
Thank you for that. This is a story field record. My name is Karen Mullin, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. We do not have that information right now. We will check with our partners at DHSS and get the committee that information.
Cost per parent grade.
chart that had a table that talked about the different places where this program was in place, and it didn't provide a lot of really useful information because there were some programs that apparently had been in place for quite a while, and that we looked about it in pretty much all the case for it. It appeared fairly cost effective, and then there were some cases where it appeared to be completely ridiculous. And we need more information to kind of explain to the table and come up with the projected cost per student over some reasonable life of the program.
Thank you for that question. Before what Jack answers that, but I'm going to note that
yes, I did hear about the pension program. I think that I was looking at some documents with groups and groups. It looked like some of our communities were needing to justify the numbers. I didn't see why the cost was so high for certain communities. And in that looking at how it's averaging, we'll have to probably do some research with the Department of Education and Development to see over the years how that's calculated out. And I recommend that we do it for family. I think that's the easiest way to do it because it's not always the parent, sometimes it's the grandparent, sometimes it's an uncle or an aunt, it's whoever, or somebody's daycare facility that is there with the parent educator, only because oftentimes parents are working, or they're out of line, or they're up on the nurse school, or they're out fishing. You know, it just depends on what their occupations are in some of these communities. So I think for family, it would probably be right that we want to do that. That's acceptable for representative crops.
Certainly, that sounds like a good idea.
And then I just kind of make two comments. Because this is a, these are grants that are administered through the state of Alaska, that's the reason why it's not easy to get the answers right away. What this bill will also do in Section 7 is require Department of Education and Early Development to include information about parents and teachers program in any report to the state legislature. Because the program has expired, we haven't been really keeping all those documents, but these are grants going out to communities, and so it's not something the state implements. The only way the state implements it and oversees it is through the grant process. And so any community can take advantage of it if they want to, and they don't want to take advantage of it, they have other tools at their fingertips or because of other programs that's fine, but it's the real source of grant program. And then I'd like to read a statement from the Department of Defense's website. And it says that the children who are participating in parents and teachers programs are significantly more advanced in language, social development, problem solving, and other cognitive abilities and score higher on kindergarten readiness tests compared to children not in the programs. And I would have to say that that's what launched this parents and teachers bill back in 2009 and 2010, and eventually got into law in 2012, was due to the fact that we had two communities that mentioned them earlier, Puna, which had 7% participation in parents and teachers program, and Mangoon, which did not, and they both were very identical communities as far as being coastal communities, fishing communities that were the same population density, and the same remoteness, and the scores were really big difference.
Whatsoever. And I agree with you, there were some curious statistics in there. Thank you, Dr. Taylor.
And yes, as we are, Mr. Mason, go ahead.
My pleasure, Mr. Mason. We're presenting this bill. The one thing that you neglected to mention is that the bill allows state and emerging local partnerships to implement the Parents and Teachers Program. So it does give the Department of Labor flexibility to work with existing programs or existing parents and teachers.
Thank you. And I also am looking on that page, and I
first program. So, okay, any more questions about passive teachers? I'll see what Fox has a question.
Yes, thank you. For your story, I'm not sure that the information is available. If somebody has, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is there some measure of what is being provided already? I suppose that would be informal. What I'm thinking is going back to when I grew up, which was Kamala, and when our parents or when our children were small age, I suppose we had a strong paper, but we just didn't. We thought we were like that, we didn't know any better. In our family, in my family, extended family, when I grew up, there was a network, there was a network within the church we attended, and in the same vein, when our children were that age, we were introduced, we just didn't, and there was informal support within the church and within the community. I don't know if there's a way to measure that. Because I'm trying to figure out really the marginal benefit and the marginal cost. There's some portion of our families that are already competent in the task. And then we can figure out what the target market is and how, what we're really doing to implement this and get the maximum benefit. So, if there is some sort of information that the department might have that can speak to what's already existing, it would be helpful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Section 2 is the number that is a guideline on SSI 2 for
is to clarify that the assessment for grades 4 to 12 is at least 5 hours, while the assessment for grades 1 to 3 is at least 4 hours. This is just a clarifying change to ensure that there is no ambiguity as to what is a valid time of class for a student. Section 3, amounts of license action 14.03.060, to permit the Department of Early Education Development the ability to approve and supervise a district's early education program. This section is repealed on June 30th, 2024, in Section 4. This repeal is part of the overall sunset clauses included in this legislation. Indeed, we will no longer be permitted to approve a pre-K program to include a school, a pre-K program in schools and counterparts as the attitude of membership plans. Moving on to page 3. As is a physical system, I want to say that we don't have this one memorandum about this world's early education components in your package. As well as I appreciate you giving us the page number that we're going through. I just want to add Senator Bodick's name's quite a description about how the reason why it was repealed on June 30th, 2024. And can you explain to me the parents talking about not thinking being at that? Education committee is to ensure the program efficacy. Please note on page 39, at the beginning of the very comprehensive report we do mention for the administration, to discuss how successful the program has been and any other investments that you need needed to see if the class of education should continue and the organization should continue.
Yes, thank you, and welcome,
Madam Senator. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the topic. For District 3, and I can talk a little bit if you don't mind about the bill question in my mind. So, education committee in this matter. The program that I had in the next week, and I had a lesson in education, I mean, just my own teacher and teacher, which was some of the knowledge that I actually removed from the school bill, which we removed from the major draft in SB8 and SB22. As a teacher retention task force, and he did need was created and it was a direct result of this legislation, so we'll be sharing that with you today. The deliberation, and this was actually a point of contention, as you mentioned, all that we covered in Section 84, that they can make some examples whether or not the robustness, I mean, we should have robust reports, whether it was in that sunset date or termination date. One part of the discussion was that if indeed there was a termination date set, actually, it might create a barrier to school districts being interested in actually participating in the program because there would be a known date when the program would cause them to either choose to increase the taxes in their own district to cover the cost of the now lost foundation formula for water and an early education program, or you take the risk of success. So the contention led to inclusion of all the elements in this bill. I would argue that the deliberations decided on what they needed, but one of those was the robust reporting. That has now all been combined in this bill to make sure that from a significantly robust reporting process to make sure that we have regular updates on efficacy. And remember that I believe it was Representative Gillen that asked the question about the reporting in the first meeting. Presenting that regular reporting of a group of actual parents and teachers and other users that would be evaluating the different standards of the bill and also be evaluating programs in the city. So they would report on a regular basis to provide you the opportunity in real time as members of this committee and the Senate committee to be told. The alternative is to just present it based on all elements of the chair of the committee agreed with. You may have one sensor down one element, but it was probably to be consistent. You would have to have sensor based on all elements of the bill, so the sensor data was down as the Supreme Court. He and I continued to disagree with that, but we agree on the principles of the bill, and I think that's important for you to know that the principles of the bill you share, and those are those three principles.
responding to your recommended dismissal of Senate Brown from the first day and what probably had been with the House version of this bill and certainly continue to work with the majority of the Senate side to move that portion of that and address that bill as well.
Thank you very much for your answer. I'm going to talk to you about
the question about my rights. Yes, thank you. Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. I wonder if you could have a little more behind your discussion on the sunset and the recording. From a business perspective, we're starting up something new, and we want to make sure that it is reviewed certainly within the first year, just kind of going in the right direction, or is it looks as if it were being moved to something very different. And then as time goes on, you might want to review it the next year, or maybe even the fourth year, or the seventh year, et cetera. But we just have a 10-year sunset. It's really no point. It goes on indefinitely. Open its last 10 years. If it's made it 10 years, there's no point in thinking about sunsetting it. But there is a point in thinking about sunsetting it if it is not working within. Well, it's not meeting certain objections within, certainly within the first year, and the second year, and the third year. So how would that be thought through well enough?
To the chair, to the representative, perhaps just to the representative of the chair, you have precisely made the discussion of the representative of the folks exactly right. If indeed the program is working after 10 years, if there's no point in having a sunset clause, and that's why the relationship that is in the bill, you would want to have a pretty modern plan. You want to know in the first year and the second year, which there are abilities to recall whether or not you'd be able to implement the program. You would begin to see results. Initially, you'd see results in the pre-K kindergarten, early learning, evaluations that are done by the department, and you would present to look at those to see if indeed it's through 10 years of experience with pre-K kindergarten service is happening in the state, because that continues to improve the religious, the development scoring, on those emotional tests and those other reimbursed things for those who are entering kindergarten. But when you get to that, the ones that really matter would be in third grade, again, in eighth grade, so those are two critical areas. You want to follow the cohort so that they know you're in. And that's precisely the reporting mechanisms in this bill now do. They literally set guideposts for us being able to watch how things are going over time. And that's precisely the reason for this, is if you're going to have something that you can hope you will actually change, move the needle in education, you have to have evidence of that. And so that's one of the things we insisted on including in this piece of legislation. To really change the right back, an early education program in your district, you have still a lot of time to do this. And if you're going to engage parents, you want to have evidence that it's doing what you said it would do. And if you're not doing it, that would encourage the future legislature to end the program, because it would not be effective. That's precisely another evidence that they do this time. I don't want to put the resources behind it, but it doesn't work. It doesn't serve any of its purpose. And it certainly is not fair to the parents and the teachers and the students that would otherwise, all of that promise imposed on them, we have results. They deserve results. And that's why we have put results with us to really spell.
Well, we were discussing the orders making the development program and looked at the audit for the orders. And the auditor's comment was that the reporting requirements weren't specific enough to relate to meaningful information. And I was trying to get around whether that was true. Some of the auditors thought it would be good, others the part of it was good, but the auditor, specifically to Umbers, stated exactly what I had been thinking for the past 20 years. Whether I'm right or not, I don't know. But so then the question would be,
Commissioner has been from here, the powers of those who have taken and processed the government care records easily, to those that have not been same district examples to apples. And in that process, they found in the 4 districts that they have been measured on, including their factors, Lower Basque Blue School District, the Ingram School District, Madison, which has a number of different types of programs, who are doing a number of different types of programming. And I know some folks do all four of them. Using robust measurement has shown not just by third grade, but by eighth grade, that's what those gains have been retained. Although the quality factor in each of these four districts, one, strong quality early education programs, two, strong reading programs driven by the districts, strong reading programs that meet four of the same parameters that are laid out in this legislation. In other words, we spent 10 years experimenting with these concepts. Each time, now we have 10 years worth of evidence, 10 years worth of evidence, to make this common, to bring those concepts to the rest of the state. And that's what this bill intends to do.
Thank you, and I know for your answers are kind of comparable to that.
I'm pleased to be joined today. I know we'll be a robust discussion on teacher retention and recruitment because I wrote the report and I went to the district group presenting the report for staff. I'm happy to answer questions while I can, and I will defer to the importance of this legislation and what it helps to get to any other committee. So apparently we have evidence that the idea works, and then the next step is that we need it here, or there, and that we identify where we need it and we're accomplishing, where's what the other reporting is going to reveal the success or failure of that.
Over the long term in a particular district.
just need to move it to doing them and maintaining them over the long term so that our total bill is paid. Do you want to have any final comments?
Yes, I would love to. So, the precise demand about how some of the grants will be set up in our time to get four districts to focus on the state of the wellness consistency with the grant departments, they end up being most focused on it. They're going up to, and we actually learned it before, because we didn't know how well the members in either body with those in our science, we know that for about weeks and weeks, I don't know if you know, but we not only determined the community experience, but they also fairly added to these really robust programs in 2021. The robust presentation we have on the education in this committee underscores exactly what this goal is designed to do. These exceptions are evidence for the committee to identify and write down the pages with better control, like the sections down, these are the ones that they were reporting. Section 7, Section 13, Section 21, and then the more comprehensive Section 23. And what we've tried to do, both in 7-7 Representative Expo has taken on as much as we can on that reporting environment so that you can see it all not be in the nation version of spread out a lot of things. We really have it focused on four areas, and the reason it's the four different areas is one is from a partner's required by districts to the department, and then that graph on 23 is a synthesizing of all that effort and process because we did take the reporting piece serious. What we haven't done with education policy for years is have accountability. This is the part of accountability.
Thank you for that. And I think one thing that's a little important is as you're looking at this report, you can see the gaps and where it needs to be a course correction and what is missing. So that's critically important. So thank you for that. And thank you for your time joining us today. I really appreciate that. So
thank you. Thank you for letting me in on a few words.
Thank you. for the Maintenance School District to evaluate a student who is at least needed for an early education program, whether that be a preschool program or a kindergarten program. That was from your facility. As these provisions are repealed in June 30th, 2034, we'll revert to the current existing statute. However, because the repeal of subsection D, the new subsection has to be abolished, which is D. And that permits a student who is at least 5 years of age as a September 1st to attend a public program.
This is assuming that in 2034, the program is repealed. Okay, so we're talking this is a little bit confusing. So we're talking about future possibilities and being ready for the circumstances should the program be repealed after 10 years of Marble School Jordan. Thank you.
The school started dating four was established for early education programs as of September 1st. And for the discussions in higher education, it was recognized that not all individuals may be 32 for the early education program, which will allow for maximum flexibility for districts. The section 14.0.0 was amended to permit districts to extend their already
to the district you're familiar with, I appreciate that. Thank you.
connection between the two, as well as the fact that there's a lot of robust Head Start programs in many villages around rural Alaska. What would be the intention or, I guess, kind of goal of providing pre-K programs where in areas where there might be Head Start, but there may not necessarily be the volume of children to participate in those programs? How would they go from there in those circumstances?
If you do look at page 9, starting at line 6 through line 14, this section does direct the school district to work with existing programs to establish whether they will use capacity to add an additional district program or if that additional program will close other existing programs based on community need. The one provision I would like to highlight is that all programs must meet the high community need and design and culture responsive to the state to be included in this conversation.
So does that mean that if we look to sort of reference work 14-0-7-1-6-5, beginning on page 16 and 17, if I'm understanding correctly, so in this circumstance, is it my understanding that in order for existing Head Start programs to partner with their school districts to that they would have to meet all the education requirements as outlined in the experience requirements as outlined on page 17. And for those who may be listening, the question here is related to this particular bill, as I understand it, would require teachers in early education programs hold about a teacher certificate, completed a minimum of 6 credit hours in early education, have 2 years of experience teaching either an early education program. Can you speak to that as well?
The standard set in this legislation is to ensure that all students have access to a high-quality, locally designed, culturally responsive early education program. We have had some programs on record indicating that they would consider it being able to meet these standards as they are the best set for practicing for early education students. I think that is a policy decision that we would have to make if they wanted to amend that section or move those statutes. However, it is set in regulation with those statutes have to see what those standards actually look like. And I believe the department has been very firm on its commitment to working with local stakeholders, working with local community groups, working with local districts to ensure that those regulations are applicable and meet all community needs.
Clarification question. So I just want to clarify and make sure we understand correctly. If a district where there's an insufficient number of children in the district where there might already be a Head Start program, in order to receive the grant, then be under the section to transition or partner with the state under this particular policy, these teacher education requirements for early education would have to be met in those particular communities. Is that correct?
On page 17, starting on line 14, requirements for teacher in charge of the program. So this is not a teacher who lives in each classroom, but a teacher who is in charge of designing the early education program for that district. I'm not sure if that changes your question, but we are just talking about early educator in the early education program having to meet the educational requirements. It is not a teacher who is in charge of designing the program.
That's very helpful. That's what I was looking for. So in terms of in-classroom educators, because many of the Head Start programs throughout Alaska operate while they're on the right path in their educational,
get injuries on my hand, during the skin, paraprofessionals in the classroom are already in the middle of the one of them. And a better comment made to me is in the school district that they have been working partly through the borough, you know, some support for the delivery, and they have partnered with the Head Start program. And they have been sharing times of day, so in the morning, I can remember which one it was, school district in the afternoon, and then Head Start will reverse, and they come to our parents and request for that they need more actual food out of the day to move children around, and it's much more complimentary of the way of that because by the time the parents are showing up, depending on how age, resting time, and different things that they need. But that has been a really excellent partnership that has come with all the early childhood partners working together to meet the needs in their community. So I just wanted to share that. And for a part, I had a question. I'm sorry. You might have forgotten it because that was a bit ago.
Thank you.
jumping from the earliest stances in our outreach, and I'm still on page 9. I would like to note that nothing in section 14 prohibits a district from using their own funds to protect and participation is in that. Excuse me, I apologize. I would like to note that nothing in section 14 prohibits a district from using their own funds to establish a new resolution to take a program in their community. Their participation in our program is not required. School districts are asked on the existing early education programs prior to the bell for grants as well.
Sorry, yes, this is Sarkowski's director. Ms. Kevin, before we move on, I was hoping to better understand on page 8 the difference between defending a defense that begins on 9/19 as well as that it begins on 9/20/17, over that time frame. Is that speaking to the same grant, or are they two different programs? Sorry about that.
But the grant services is all asking, I believe, on the same grant program.
Thank you. Substantial is not able to speak today. Does the department have a sense of how many of the existing Head Start programs in Alaska have teachers that will receive those programs that meet these qualifications?
We as a state do not collect that data that may be available through the federal government reporting process.
Do you have a sense of the existing Head Start program's ability to meet this particular line if there's an event that they were not stuck with the program in aligning with the situation? Questions on this particular case, there's a lot in here in this study right now. Continued utilization of that locally developed curriculum.
program is totally accessible. Therefore, that person
person has grounds for any policy. In my mind, the way that this is currently working, I think that needs some thought as to what is going to happen when this gets out and there's down the road somebody decides they have nothing better to do than file a lawsuit.
Response to those comments of this individual and do you have any response to those comments?
Is there some way to look, to evaluate that risk of the food program? And accessibility, as I'm currently talking about, the culturally appropriate could be broader, but the interpretive could be broader than what we're thinking about, and a number of those different issues raised, has resulted in lawsuits in the past. Somebody at some point got to do the right thing, and then somebody else got to work, and there has been half a dozen major lawsuits surrounding public education and what that really means. So I wonder if we can draw from that experience and try and somehow predict what might happen looking at from that perspective.
Children at an elementary school. The way programs like this normally work is to work in a local community. I know in Anchorage, for example, as the student population has declined somewhat, the superintendent has made available classroom space in schools for preschool programs, for Head Start programs, and so on. And I fully expect that each community should the program be available. To students in culture, this is the program in the elementary school, not exist in culture rather than busing kids to parents, because I can have friends now in this room about 30 minutes away.
Thank you for your discussion. I have a couple of comments. I think part of this is to remind you this is what public education is all about, too, is trying to make sure all of the services are available to all students, and it can be difficult now with the administration and responsibility and we're passionate about doing what we have to do.
Just a brief note on what making staff members in the first step. The section here essentially calls for the department to develop regulations. Now, the process of developing these regulations, many of these issues can be addressed in the format that would have the playbook, but you can reach out to stakeholders. So essentially, there's going to be many of these students who can develop the regulations, which might lead to a better product than if we try to label all of that out here in this committee. Just a
comment.
Right. And I don't think that we can solve this problem in this committee, because going back through history, I wasn't even on the discussion, but whoever was discussing the state constitution had some idea in mind. And then the state developed some sort of program that they thought that the requirements of the Constitution were trying to be something unconstitutional. And then 10, 15 years later, or less, I don't know, but somebody else had a different idea and it goes into the court and they have a whole different perspective. And a lot of this is driven by court decisions too. And I think I just think very serious about the need get the lawyer department or somebody involved in the discussion and get their opinion on it. Of the list. But I'll use the example of something that we're focusing, for instance, on the lower, what do we call it, lowest performing 25% was the starting point, and then the implementation plan is to go to the client's districts. But not all the 25%, but all of them to get to a budget crunch in the government's plan in 10 districts. Then the other 40 districts start suing and forcing.
And you have to have certain amount of contact with the people who are saying that the struggle to have a response. I'm going to tell you that I'm pretty clear that this is exactly the same as the companions. I'm going to look at it, which is made up of lawyers who have been on this. And I'm going to tell you the question that you might have.
Just to follow up that the sponsor's office has done an impeccable job in outlining the previous court cases as being an intention to, or the draft before us is an intention to help mitigate the state's legal risk based on previous lawsuits. And so I think to Representative Brooks's point, the state has already been challenged and already shown to lose with regard to meeting its constitutional obligations equitably to all Alaska students that the student in a small community in my district versus larger school and urban district, there's different challenges. But there's already been consistent case law acknowledging that the state's shortcomings in this area, and I appreciate that. The intention behind this legislation is to bring equity and opportunity to all Alaska students, regardless of where they live. So I just wanted to put that on record.
Thank you very much for making those comments. So we have a meeting to be wrapping it up here. So I'm trying to take from 8 to 18. That states need but not approve early education programs that is existing high quality, locally designed, consumer sponsored early education programs. It may not approve those programs if the result would increase, would be more than $3 million in fiscal Appropriate campaign funds. Section 45, next deed, to begin adopting regulations prior to the effectiveness date of this act. I think to record that this case addresses a viewing, the regulatory process as well as established is clear and provides opportunities for stakeholder and community engagement, and also as a public commentary period, as an opportunity to begin adopting regulations prior to the effectiveness date of this act, allows for a high level of constituent and stakeholder and community engagement in that process. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. Back on page 20, in section 27, just going back to the year end fund balance, when something is greater than 25, is there some change in the 10% fund balance to 25 in this language?
Through the chair, you're going to have that is correct.
Thank you.